Warning. My dad and Matt say bad words in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Get on with it.
Yes, get over it! Yeah!
All right, well, it's Matt, it's Trevor. We are the Nighthawks. We have a podcast available on all of your podcatchers, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, nighthawkspodcast.com. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. But talking about some movies that we've been watching lately. You know me. I like myself a detective story. I like myself a mystery. And so I checked out a couple. Both of them sequels, I guess, or could be. Both of them part of a franchise. But the first one I want to talk about is a long-awaited third film to bear the name Fletch. This time around, it is a adaptation of Gregory MacDonald's Fletch character in the film Confess Fletch, which is an adaptation of the novel by the same name. We had a Fletch episode, I think, that fell victim to some...
We had technical difficulties with the Fletch episode.
Was that technical difficulties? Or I thought it may have been one where we just couldn't stop quoting the movie back and forth.
Yeah, the file was corrupt or something. Like we recorded it and it wasn't.
So if I remember right, though, based on that conversation that we had 5 years ago, you had seen the first one and not the second one. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think I rewatched it for the record and liked it. I don't think it will ever, you know, like part of our discussion was like, I don't think it will ever be like a movie I watched when I was 12, you know?
Yeah. It was a movie I watched when I was when I was 12. So both of the Fletch films were pretty special to me. Obviously, Chevy Chase was the lead in those. They're very funny, very acerbic. The first one is a good story that allows Chevy Chase to go up and do his Chevy Chase shit, which in a movie from 1980 was funny. The second movie is really more of an excuse for Chevy Chase to do Chevy Chase shit. And the story is kind of taking a backseat. But it is still very fun. Chevy Chase doing his shtick is very funny. You're going to have Arlie Ermey as a televangelist. That's worth the price of admission alone. You've got Hal Holbrook in there. You've got Tex Cobb making a very stunning appearance in that. It's fun. It's not as iconic as the original, but it was fun. Confess Fletch was a surprise. This seemed like a franchise that, like, what do? Do you try and make a sequel to a Chevy Chase movie and have somebody go in and do Chevy Chase's shtick? Do you have him go in and be really acerbic and really asshole-ish? Or do you, like, lean more closer to the novels? And in the novels, the character of Fletch is a funny character, but he's not nearly on the level of a Chevy Chase. But this was a surprise for me.
He's more of a wisecracking detective, or he's a reporter, right?
Yeah, he's an investigative reporter. And what's strange about Confess Fletch, it's the second novel in the series, and he is kind of living high and fat off of some of the events from the first novel and the first movie. And he is no longer a reporter, but he is an art connoisseur. According to the novel and according to the new adaptation of the film, has spent the last several years after being a crime reporter of some note. He has engaged in his passion for art, and that's the world he's been moving in, and that's where we start this film.
Hi, Frank.
Where are you right now?
None of your business.
Come on, Fletch. Aren't you bored?
I need you for a story. I got that police report you wanted. I just emailed it to you. It's encrypted.
What's the password?
Go F yourself.
My father's paintings were stolen. The Picasso was appraised at $20 million.
Well, it hardly seems worth stealing.
You're not a detective.
But I was an investigative reporter. It's an occupation that's been cheapened by the digital age, like president.
Earl Maurice Fletcher?
They caught me in the middle of a yawn. Can you imagine that?
Who killed this young woman?
I think the victim interrupted an art theft.
Your fingerprints are on the murder weapon, and someone matching your description was seen with the victim. Come back with me to police headquarters.
I get it. You want my help? Okay.
Hey, guys, this is the way we can call in a coffee order, a kill for a macchiato. Not literally.
I looked into your criminal record.
And?
You're a bit of a shady character, Mr. Fletcher.
But I am adorable.
If you did kill that girl, do the right thing and
give me an exclusive.
Let's talk about the suspects.
The Countess di Grazia married Papa for his money. Somehow she's involved.
Flesh.
She's trying to seduce me.
Quite the collection of impressionists you have here.
Those are reproductions.
That's how we introduce my children. Why did you lie to me?
You're becoming paranoid. Maybe you should get a gun.
The lead that they've got in the Fletch role, Irwin Fletcher, is John Hamm, probably best known for Mad Men, although he's carving out a pretty decent career. I loved him in Bad Times at El Royale. But in this, he is not Chevy Chase. He's not trying to be Chevy Chase, but he still manages to be very funny. And I think it's better that he wasn't trying to crib Chase, because honestly, when you go back and watch those movies, it's funny to watch Chevy Chase do Chevy Chase shit, but if you were the person in that situation opposite Chevy Chase, he is a class A dickhead. And I don't know that that character, as played by Chevy Chase, the way he played him in the 80s, would have flown for a modern audience in a modern film. I think he probably would have been a little too asshole-ish and a little irredeemable.
He's definitely a notch worse than, say, Bill Murray in Ghostbusters.
Right.
Who is a bit of a trial to a brand new audience, right?
I was pleased because it is a fairly decent adaptation of the book. I read the book in advance of this movie coming out. It took the slot from one of my Spencer reads as kind of a quick read mystery aperitif after reading something a little more dense. But it also deviates enough that the movie was still a surprise for me. There were still some twists and turns that I didn't see coming. Kyle MacLachlan is also in this. Anytime you give that guy a chance to chew scenery, I'm there. Showgirls, I'm there. Oh, Twin Peaks, I'm there. Dune, I'm there. Confess Fletch, I am there.
If you just drop the reins and let Kyle MacLachlan run, he'll stack the donuts for you.
He was a love interest in, I think it was like How I Met Your Mother. For several seasons that he was great in.
He's Mayor Kyle MacLachlan in Portlandia.
Too. That's right.
Like a fictionalized version of himself.
But Confess Fletch, it's funny. I don't know that it's nearly as much of a howler as the original two, which is not a criticism. I think this works as a fun mystery film. It's high art and rich people and plenty skewering of both. John Hamm is just charismatic as hell in this. You can see in John Hamm's performance a Fletch that could get away with some of the shit that Fletch does because you are inclined to like this guy. He is just instantly likable. One of the departures they made is in the book, Fletch is kind of dogged by a police inspector who would become Gregory MacDonald's other title character in a spin-off series of books called Flynn.
Is he the Flynn of In Like Flynn?
No, that's Flint. But Flynn is an Irish cop with a lot of kids at home. He has his own spin-off series of novels. Now, I don't know if there was a rights issue. I don't know if it was a conscious choice. But the character of Flynn is not used. However, Roy Wood Jr., who is a hilarious commentator for The Daily Show, plays a similar inspector in this. Opposite his aide-de-camp rookie partner, played by Aidan Mary, and they are an honest surprise, perfect foil for John Hamm. Some of the back and forth they have is some of the best stuff in the movie. Also, a Mad Men reunion for John Hamm. John Slattery is in this as Fletch's consternated editor, Frank Jaffe. So this is really fun. If you're a fan of the Fletch series, this, be warned, it is not Chevy Chase Fletch, but if you are in for a noirish mystery with a comedic take, this delivers. And I'm really pleased. I'd like to see more out of this franchise from this team. I was really pleasantly surprised by it.
I actually might have to put that on my list to check out then, if it got your Fletch stamp of approval.
Now, speaking of investigation and crime, Matt, you caught Dahmer, right?
Yeah, I got sucked into watching Dahmer.
I've been so reticent to watch any of the new true crime stuff because it all feels so weirdly gross and sensationalistic. This got bought up because Making a Murderer did so well or The Staircase did so well. You know, like, it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff these days because there's so much chaff. And so I've been reluctant to dig into Dahmer. What are we dealing with here?
So I would say that my issue with Dahmer is that it's too good. It's a strange, like, thing to say.
What are you doing there? The smells. Power tools going all hours of the night. I hear screaming coming from your apartment.
I'll just try and say I'm sorry. Is she gonna open your gift? You didn't know.
I don't know what's in that.
It's just meat.
I'm not eating that.
Try to do a nice thing, you know? Just like my mom. Telling on me when I ain't done nothing wrong.
I called you for months. And it's too late. Y'all came too late.
Eat it.
Made too good of a show out of something that is actually sordid and pathetic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Jeffrey Dahmer's just like a fucking loser, right? He was a sad major league fucking tool bag, and almost by accident, although they try to do like a Eileen Wuornos, you know, a monster thing and uggo him up a little, but he can't play Jeffrey Dahmer with like his abs out and shit, you know? and it's just, it's weird to watch them try to float that. You can't do it if you also in any way accurately depict the things he did, but they all but try to make him, they walk real close to the line of trying to make him sympathetic, because they strongly imply that if he ever could have just gotten his shit together and gotten a boyfriend, he'd have been fine, you know? I think that's, like, I personally think that's just kind of shitty. And they make him seem very simple, like he's just sort of muddling through. And I do harp a lot on the idea that, like, the idea of the genius serial killer is kind of bullshit.
Right.
There's been one serial killer that was genuinely a you know, verified, had quite a high IQ, and that was Ed Kemper.
Speaking of really well done true crime, the centerpiece for it steals the show for Mindhunter.
Yeah, played by Cameron Britton, also of the Umbrella Academy. And Ed Kemper is a fascinating real-life figure, even though he's also kind of, what he did was very pathetic, but he's interesting because now that he's incarcerated and he's still alive, also the fact that he's like almost 7 feet tall and he's a real-life kind of Michael Myers or Jason figure. Like, but he's also a freaking goofball and very odd to listen to talk to, and he has a Green Bay, Wisconsin accent, very open and insightful and almost helpful about his crimes and his MOs. And so there's all this tape of Ed Kemper being like, oh yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of guys that do what I did, they had not a problem with authority, but they actually wanted authority to be more effective in their life. And I think that's why I wanted to be a police officer at one point, because I thought if I could wield some authority and have authority figures around me, like respectable men around me, I would have the figures in my life that I was lacking. And then the interviewer's like, Ed, that's really insightful, you know, knowing that and having had time to think about all these things. You think you should be paroled? And he's like, oh no, I would murder a woman immediately if you let me out today. Like, he's just sitting there eating donut 1 minute, and then he's like, I don't like to think about it, but I do like to think about it, and I would probably just, you know, the first woman I saw, just put her in my trunk. And that's why they never parole me. what else can I help you guys with? It's just like captivating. But and it was him, like he was interviewed a lot for the FBI profiling unit. Between him and Bundy, who Bundy was not actually exceptionally intelligent. He was 110 IQ and he was functional. You know, he functioned in society, but the overwhelming theme with all these guys is if you like Zodiac, Kemper, what's his name? The frozen ground guy. It doesn't matter. All of them, if you look at them, Kuklinski, the Iceman, right? All these guys, the overwhelming repetitive theme you see is not that they were geniuses. It's like in the 70s, you could barely fucking get arrested for killing people. And the message that you take away from Dahmer on the facts of the events depicted in it, Jeffrey Dahmer did everything but wear a t-shirt that on the front, it said, I go to gay clubs, I pick up disenfranchised gay men, and I kill them. I take a long time doing weird shit to their bodies. And then the back said, this shirt is not ironic or a joke. and he would have to be any more obvious or any more, like he had multiple brushes with the law. He kidnapped someone and they escaped. The family was first generation and couldn't, you know, navigate the court process very well. And Dahmer was a veteran that was, you know, ostensibly struggling with alcohol and PTSD. And so the judge in the case pled him down to the contact with a minor from the kidnapping and attempted murder. And he did a year. He frequented gay bathhouses. He kept drugging guys and having sex with them and claiming it was like an arranged kink until they kicked him out of all the bathhouses. And like, obviously, gay bathhouse owners in New York in the 70s didn't run to the police for shit very often, right? So the pattern that emerges is like, this guy could have been caught like 9 times. He's not a genius or a master trapdoor spider in human form or any of the other bullshit you hear about him. He's just a schmuck. And the further back in time you go, the worse it gets when you're like, everyone's like, oh, H.H. Holmes was probably America's most prolific serial killer. Well, he's killing people before they had fucking fingerprints. It was easy. He's killed people and be like, I don't know. He didn't come home. Shit happens.
It takes 6 months to realize that your daughter's not riding home anymore.
Anyway, I got real sucked into the show. The show itself is very well produced, well acted. Evan Peters is great at what he's doing in it. And the people that play his family and stuff are like mesmerizing and sad, and the whole thing is very sad, and like it's hard to, it's something I couldn't binge watch, but I got like 4 into it. It's like I have to finish it, I guess. I don't know if I recommend it. If you're a true crime person, and if you are, it's a well-made piece of true crime media. I think they pull up on the stick enough and make him look repulsive enough by the end of it. But for like in that episode 3, 4, 5, they're almost trying to make him look pathetic and like it's none of it's his fault, you know. I mean, I don't think Jeffrey Dahmer is no ball of fire, but he was not of diminished capacity. He was not a person that was not responsible for his actions. He knew what he was doing. He had a violent sexual compulsion he gave into. He's a knowing multiple capital murderer. He's not a sympathetic figure. There's tons of people that can't work out their shit with their dad, that they'd rather kiss boys and they don't kill anybody, you know. I don't know. I have every complaint everybody else has with it, but I watched it, and having watched it, it was well made. And this has been my serial killer rant.
Hey, this is TC.
And this is Jim from the Studio Demands It podcast,
where every episode we take a demand from a hypothetical studio,
which could be you,
and challenge ourselves to conceptualize, pitch, and craft a film based on the stipulations
or the demands
we are given. We talk about movies all the time. Particularly, we complain about the choices made in the films we've seen.
We're nerds like that.
And, of course, like any good nerd does, we automatically assume we could do better.
Even with the demands and restrictions that clearly must have been put on by a production.
So head on over to StudioDemandsIt.com and listen to our previous library of episodes. Damn it. Our library of previous episodes. Our precious library, Jim. Our library of precious episodes.
You're a pirate, Smeagol.
Okay. So head on over to StudioDemandsIt.com to listen to our library of episodes.
And submit your demand for a future episode, too.
So go do that.
Okay, bye.
Okay, end of ad.
Well, the other detective mystery comedy that I watched, and Matt, I think you caught this one as well, the other sequel, is the...
You mean the other detective mystery comedy you watch besides Fletch?
Right.
Not the other detective mystery comedy you watch besides Dahmer.
I didn't watch Dahmer,
Because Trevor Dahmer is not a detective mystery comedy. You take that back.
Jeffrey Dahmer, a laugh riot for 2022. No, you're right. The other
Dahmer, I barely know. No.
You're right. The other
cut that out. Cut that out. No, leave it in.
The other comedy I watched apart from Confess Fletch was Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery story, a Knives Out mystery, featuring Daniel Craig as the unflappable Benoit Blanc, the smooth-talking detective in the vein of Miss Marple and Poirot and Sherlock Holmes and all those great kind of parlor detectives. Now, what a treat this was.
I might be a simple country. I might be just a simple country hyperspace chicken.
I'm sorry, I thought you was corn.
Hello! Oh my god!
Crew, we've arrived! Disruptors! Have assembled!
Welcome, gang. We got a great weekend.
Who's that?
Benoit Blanc, the detective?
Mr. Blanc,
I cannot overstate my gratitude to be here. When's the murder mystery start?
I've invited you all to my island.
Hi!
Because tonight, a murder will be committed. My murder.
Once you're dead, will we still be able to talk to you?
Yeah, I'm not playing dead the whole weekend, dude.
Well, this is truly delightful.
Across the island, I've hidden clues. You will have to closely observe each other. If anyone can name the killer, that person wins our game. Any questions?
Halle Berry, that has a kick.
Oh my God, what happened? Holy sh-
Ladies and gentlemen, there's been a murder, and the killer is in plain sight. For at least one person, this is not a game. I must insist that nobody touch the body.
Jeez, detective, who killed the party?
I need to find a motive for murder.
Everyone would stab a friend in the back to hold on to this rich bastard.
Deal with it. You're all friends. Why would anyone commit murder?
Are we even going to talk about the elephant in the room?
Am I the elephant?
Yeah, you're the elephant.
You're not that bad.
Think of the danger here.
Are you calling me dangerous?
Well, we'll see.
Let it all out.
Hell yeah!
This is reckless. The killer wouldn't hesitate to kill again if it covers their tracks.
Must be really great at Clue, huh?
I'm very bad at dumb things. Ticking boxes, running around, searching all the rooms. It's just a terrible, terrible game.
It's kind of like Magnum P.I. meets Matlock. Kind of. And We should be making fun of the inexplicable casting of Daniel Craig as the Southern gentleman. Something about the preposterousness of it and his accent is like, I'm not going to say it's bad, but it's very strange to see it emerging from his face, right?
I think in the grand history of time, if Rian Johnson keeps pumping these movies out, Benoit Blanc is going to be more iconic for Daniel Craig than James Bond is. Like, he really inhabits and makes this a fun, fun role.
I don't know. That's big words, but...
Well, here's the thing. It's almost not fair because...
I think they're good, and it's a good...
Daniel Craig gets to build Benoit Blanc up from the ground. He gets to really make that character his own. With James Bond, he does a great job of playing his James Bond... But it is in deference and homage to every other actor that's played that role. You know, you're always comparing him to Sean Connery or Pierce Brosnan or George Lazenby or, you know, what have you. Benoit Blanc is 100% his.
I like him a lot. And I think that This one, it's not really trying to be the exact same type of like parlor mystery creature.
Yeah, you're not going to figure this one out by paying attention. Yeah, you're not going to figure this one out from frame one.
But it definitely has something to say, and it says it in a very funny, winning way, and also tells the murder story. So personally, I disagree with you that it was better than Knives Out. I don't know if I'd cough that up, but it was pretty good and very consistent on a tonal level. It was more of the character, and that's what mattered. Benoit Blanc in a new wacky situation. Reminded me, quality-wise, it really reminded me of the Kenneth Branagh Pro.
I like Branagh as Pro. I think he's a good cast for that role.
Well, then that's what made it for me, is he's just really fun in it as Pro. But Death on the Nile, I guess why I brought it up, the original contrast I was going to draw, is that while like the tone and the sort of ingredients in the cake are similar, Death on the Nile is really a piece of like marzipan, whereas Glass Onion has a thing or three to say.
I think maybe that's why I like it a little bit more. It felt a little more substantial. On first blush, when I watched Knives Out, I was kind of expecting another Clue, which was an unfair expectation of me to bring into it. I just, it's a parlor detective mystery with a great ensemble. This is clearly a new Clue. And it's not. I think it tickles some of the same scratches, but, it's definitely its own thing. And it's more of a parlor mystery than even Clue was. And so on rewatch, I really liked it. And then this one, it ran away with me from the word go.
One thing I'd particularly point out in this one that I had a real good time with and around is the Dave Bautista, isn't it, as a kind of like a loose portmanteau of like a bro influencer, like a Liver King or a Joe Rogan, and he's a great deal of fun in it.
Ryan Johnson has been controversially quoted as saying that Dave Bautista is the best wrestling superstar to turn actor. Others of note would be Hulk Hogan, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Andre the Giant. I don't know, Matt, do you think that's too high of praise? Can you think of somebody stronger? The Rock, perhaps?
I mean, I'm trying to think of like who really, obviously The Rock is the one with the most on the Schwarzenegger to Day-Lewis celebrity to acting zero-sum axis. The Rock is the ex-wrestler with the most Schwarzeneggerian charisma, right?
Sure.
But Batista really does, he seems to actually take acting fairly seriously, although he does generally get cast in it as a large Hispanic man for some reason.
Or a large Hispanic alien. But,
fair. But some of his turns and acting things have been really good. It wasn't a huge part, but he was really good and really like kind of pivotal in the Blade Runner sequel and a few other things like that he's sort of strolled through. He's going to be a villain figure in the new Dune. He's the Beast Rabin, the sort of younger, more impulsive Harkonnen. Based on what we've seen of it so far, like that's probably going to be a really good turn for him, right? Trying to think of who, I mean, except for, you know, America's treasure, Mick Foley. I'm not sure there is a more committed former wrestler to actual acting of any kind, right?
Sure. No, I think that's fair.
Although I will say, too, like, if I were remaking They Live, I think I would put Batista in the Keith David part, not the Roddy Piper part. You'd want a more hyperbolic person.
Sure.
To be the if you could remake They Live with John Cena as Roddy Piper's part, that would be workable. But
well, I do want to say, as for the ensemble in Glass Onion, it's fantastic. I love it. You've got Edward Norton playing this kind of billionaire tech bro character that is a deadlift of Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk. You've got Kate Hudson reminding me why she stole my heart during Almost Famous. You've got Catherine Hahn, Agatha all along, killing it here. But really, the one that absolutely runs away with this movie is Janelle Monáe, who makes her it's a whole mood, makes her introduction into this movie with a pair of safety glasses and a hammer. And if there is an image that is just so indicative of going into 2023, that image, just, I felt that so hard. But she is fantastic in this. plays a multifaceted character, I guess we'll put it that way, and does so with aplomb. But I really did like this, and I think, Matt, I might agree with you here that I think because it's saying something, I may have liked this a little bit more. I think maybe I'm giving it a little more credit in that arena. But it is just a fun parlor mystery with some just skewering social commentary, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. It's provoked certain reactions from, I think, certain parties it was intended to provoke. And my final word on it would be Ben Shapiro, not a fan, and that should be all you need to know.
Well, Matt, I am a fan, and this was touch and go because I have a weird relationship with this director. But kind of rounding out our mystery and murder and death and mayhem little conversation here, You Caught X, and subsequently the prequel that came out this year also, Pearl, I Caught X recently. This is a pair of movies from Ty West. I have not caught Pearl, but I will say right now, I'm looking forward to it. I would like to see this.
Farmer's daughter, take one. I need to be famous, Wayne. All the best people are.
There ain't nobody else out there like you.
You know why?
Why?
Because you got that X factor.
Our days of struggling may soon be over.
Hollywood, here we come.
So this is it. Our own studio backlot.
You're looking for a place to stay.
Oh, yes, sir.
That's one ugly son of a bitch. And my wife, Pearl, is next door, so I would appreciate a little discretion. I just want me.
He don't know what we're doing, does he?
Well, it's better to beg for forgiveness and ask for permission.
Would you like to come inside?
Much obliged.
I want to be in the movie.
Well, you can't. The story can't just change midway through.
If Daddy catches us, there's no telling what he might do.
My wife is not well. It happens after dark.
People's eyes are gonna pop out of their damn skulls when they see this.
X, I thought, was a perfectly serviceable slasher film, and I will say that it's probably better than any of the slasher sequels or remakes that we've had lately. That's kind of my endorsement there. It does have a strong backwoods Texas Chainsaw Massacre feel to it. I don't think that's an unfair observation, but I will also say I'm not saying it as a criticism. But yeah, I have a weird history with Ty West where I did not like this guy's movies for a real long time. He was not for me. He has, some people will call it slow burn. I kind of call it long fuse. But, you know, House of the Devil, I wasn't a big fan of. And it wasn't until The Innkeepers that I turned a corner on this guy. And I watched The Innkeepers specifically because Pat Healy is in that, as well as Sarah Paxton. And both of them were in Cheap Thrills, which I loved, and I loved their performances. So I'm like, well, it was a fantastic fest movie. I guess I'll check it out. And I did end up liking The Innkeepers, although I will say the pacing was not my favorite. The Ty West movie that really turned me around was The Sacrament, which is a found footage horror movie with A.J. Bowen, who is always a delight. And it's Jonestown by any other name. They basically, it's the story of Jonestown where they don't have to worry about accuracy or, you know, pissing off family members. They basically just changed the name.
It's on our short list of very good found footage movies.
I was walking into X going, I don't know how I feel about Ty West. Like, I've liked a good run of his movies. Maybe I'll like this one. And it was pretty highly recommended by a bunch of our Fantastic Fest friends and our horror friends. So I finally checked it out. And I did. I enjoyed this. It is a Ty West movie in that a lot of the action is backloaded to the back nine. But I've come to expect that from Ty West, and I don't think I hold it against him as much. And I will say, I think he's growing as a filmmaker, and I think he does pace his films a little bit better to where they're more agreeable to my palate. Now, I say that because I know Ty West has had some diehard fans from Day Zero Plus One. And so he's obviously doing something right for some people. It wasn't for me. But Matt, what did you think of X and then subsequently the prequel?
I liked X. I really liked Pearl, but they are weird and they do trade on an aesthetic that is kind of for fans that know, like, and I don't mean that in like a snooty way. I mean it in like the pastiche is deep enough that you, like, if you just walk into X and have no idea what you're looking at, you'll be like, why are they just showing an old movie, you know? And Pearl is even kind of stranger because Pearl plays with the time is even earlier. It's almost like it parallels The Wizard of Oz in a weird way, where like parts of it are like highly saturated and parts of it are like very, very grim, and it has some unreliable narration, but it's very fun. And the only problem I had with Pearl is that it was released after X, and you sort of have that window into it's robbed of a little suspense by the mere act of being a prequel, but it really does still throw some curveballs and is really, really gorgeous, like just really impressively shot movie.
Make me the biggest star the world has ever known, so that I'll make it far, far away from this place.
Now, caring for your family during these times is admirable, but you only get one take at this life.
If only they would just die.
Pardon?
Nothing. I want to be special, dancing up on the screen like the pretty girls in the pictures.
I will not let you leave this farm again.
I'm worried there may be something real wrong with me.
Rumor has it they only take one gal per town.
Next.
We're looking for someone with X Factor.
It has to be me.
How about a film nobody else has seen?
Is it legal?
It will be eventually.
I know what I've done. Bad things. Terrible, awful, murderous things.
Help me!
We're running a little long on this, but I did want to talk about Mia Goth, who is the actress. I'm not sure, where did she come from?
Of the Connecticut Goths.
Yeah.
I would say she comes from France in the 700s.
But anyways, she's a very talented actress, based on this one movie that I've seen. But it's a real showcase for her because she's able to not only play one of the set-upon teenagers in this slasher movie, she also plays an elderly heavy character, often in the same frame. And then she is then able to kind of play that same character at a younger age in the prequel. So really good year for Mia Goth, really kind of like slamming herself into the horror market and establishing herself as somebody on my radar, at the very least.
I'll be damned. That appears to actually be at least the abbreviated form of her legal name.
I literally thought she stole that from the family on The Sims.
Yeah, Mia Mello da Silva Goth.
Well, shut my mouth.
Either she changed it, or it's really her government name. Yeah, she's very multiple roles, and I will say too that the role in Pearl is more challenging and more interesting than her character in X. Like, X is also kind of hard to explain in that it's like it revolves around a slasher that targets the cast of a good old fashioned 70s porno.
Yeah.
pornographic film. And so it's very like, and particularly the first half of it is very, very campy throwback 70s vibes.
And but very no, like Randy, Pearl, you're going to see, I think, virtually every character in that movie naked. for good or ill.
Like I said, the only real weakness of Pearl is that it requires an entire other movie of setup, and that setup removes a little bit of suspense. But other than that, and the way they subvert that is just having a kind of deep dive into what the character is going through in her head and why she makes the inevitable decisions. And they do that pretty well, although it is definitely like a broad movie in the sense it's like exaggerated. Like it's not meant to be.
It's a slasher movie for slasher fans.
Yeah, it's a slasher movie, but it also has, like I said, a lot in common in terms of tone and structure with The Wizard of Oz, right? we didn't talk about Andor. Andor's really good.
I haven't seen Andor yet. I have started Andor multiple times and just, it's been chaotic, and sometimes you can't get shit watched, and I haven't gotten it watched yet, but I'm hearing excellent things.
It gets so good by the end. I got a little misty a couple times.
So
it's definitely the best. It's the best of the Star Wars TV series by a bit.
Are you even Baby Yoda, man? Like, I really loved The Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian's fun in a different way, but Andor is like, Andor is close to being an actual revolutionary text. Like it's like much like Rogue One that it sort of leads up to. It does hammer home that like this is how power works, and this is why empires are gross. And it also has like the ostensibly supporting characters of Mon Mothma and this guy Luthen, who is Alexander Skarsgård, who is just a star turn as like a master rebel spy who is by turns a daffy kind of a feat art dealer, and then just a badass spy master by night. And he has his personal little ship is going to enter the annals of Star Wars lore beside the Millennium Falcon as one of the cooler ships you could own to get you out of everyone's hair. It's a neat show. It's really good. Even does interesting things with the character of Saw Gerrera.
To steal from the Empire? You just walk in like you belong. They're so proud of themselves. So fat and satisfied. They can't imagine that someone like me would ever get inside their house.
Cassian Andor. The Empire is choking us so slowly. We're starting not to notice. What I'm asking is this. Wouldn't you rather give it all to something real? I need all the heroes I can get.
For the greater good.
Call it what you will.
Let's call it war.
Very good. I'll give you that it's a little down, and it might not be as fun as the best episodes of Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett. It is not a Western in space. It is not a fun serial. It is a pretty serious dramatic action show. It's pretty good. I don't think it has a single lightsaber in it.
You know, and that's just for the sake of feeling like I need to add something. That's why I'm looking forward to this. Number one, I really liked Rogue One. As time marches on, that's really the one of the latter day Star Wars movies that I've really latched onto. And I think it's because I am so bloody sick of the Skywalker saga and the Skywalkers just being the most significant family in a galaxy of characters. You know, everybody has to have their brush with one of the Skywalkers, and that's fine. That's catering to an audience, and that is the story that we have been telling. But this is such a rich world. This is such a rich universe, a rich galaxy, if you will, with so many stories that don't involve lightsabers, that don't involve Jedi, that don't involve things that we've seen in every movie since 1976 or whenever it was.
Well, and the interesting thing about Andor is, like, along those lines, it deepens the idea, whereas, like, as long as we're following the Jedi and their kind of monoculture and its defense of galactic democracy, you're sort of making the Empire / Republic out to be like one sort of contiguous civilization and not like thousands of worlds under like a Pax Romana. Whereas like in Andor, they get into like, oh, this colony world that Andor grew up on, right, is like actually it has its own culture because people have lived on it for thousands or however many years, you know? Like, they get into, like, these are individual planets and the people on them, like, care about home and hearth first and are dedicated to the cause of their local interests and needs and have, it's a mining planet and they have, like, a kind of a weird implied mythology around their populist takeover of their own mines. They clash heavily with the Empire over that. And then you follow a couple of Imperial characters. They are sniveling, toady Imperial characters, but they're shown to be under the delusion that they're creating safety and stability. And they're shown the motivation of, through captive media and through, you know, the politics of stability and the politics of accommodation, it's demonstrated how, like, well, you could legitimately, like, join the Empire because you object to what you see on the news, because you think that, like, it's cool that they have a problem with the Emperor, but why are they breaking windows, you know? It lays some of that stuff on pretty darn directly, and it has some stuff to say. It says it very well. Diego Luna is excellent at conveying, like, when it picks up, he's already burnt out. Like, he's already sort of been in one rebellion and gone to prison for it and gotten out, and now he kind of just wants to have a life. And they really do a good job of depicting how you get kind of sucked back in. They also discuss Luthen's character is an accelerationist that is content with the fact that he might, like, people are going to die if he starts a war. And he thinks pouring gas on the fire is the only way to get rid of the Emperor. So that philosophy of accelerationism versus incrementalism, whereas Mon Mothma, she is a fifth columnist, but she's working on a platform of, like, she's in the Senate and she's going to try to do as much as she can the right way. Their values clash parallel to the same goal. It's a neat piece of work, and it's going to be, like, it's as close to a piece of serious political space opera as something can be, even though that is kind of a silly term. So the one thing it's not is anti-corporate. They know never to mess with that mouse.
The Mouse, which next year goes into the public domain. Now, there's a whole conversation. I think we need to just sit down and have that conversation for an episode. There's a whole slew of, like, caveats that will come with that, but I still predict it's going to happen. I don't think the Mouse is going to try. I think they're going to let this one go.
He was America's greatest investigative reporter. And now,
Hoop!
He's back.
Any mail for me?
Bletch lives. He's a master of disguise.
Elmer Gantry, Elmer Fudd Gantry.
This house is obviously infested with reticularmies, Mario Cuomo.
Well, what's that?
That's what?
And a dedicated professional.
I quit.
Rumor has it that you have inherited a sizable piece of property.
Mr. Fletcher?
As far as you know, what can I do for you?
There's been a murder.
Was she feeling all right last night?
She felt great to me.
And Fletch is the prime suspect.
You feel like making a statement?
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Demons out!
He's willing to try anything.
That's great.
Risk everything.
Bend over.
Ben, nice to meet you, Victor Hugo.
And stop at nothing.
Hold on tight!
Chevy Chase, Fletch Lives.